Return to Camp Blood, episode 47, State of the Franchise with Jason Parker. This episode is brought to you by FridayThe13thFranchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Warren, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doing if you stay here.
Never come back again.
Today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselor, Eric.
Hey, what's up, y'all?
So, we were going to have Jason on to sort of defend Jason Goes to Hell, because that's a film that is near and dear to Jason's heart. But given the fact that me and Eric sort of came around to it, I really didn't think it was all that necessary to have a debate. So while we will talk a little bit about the film, I really think that we'll use at least some of this time to give you sort of a state of the franchise, because there is some news worthy of talking about right now. So yeah, Jason, you are our second guest who has returned. How's it going tonight, man?
Doing good. It's a shame that it's kind of bittersweet, because I was hoping to debate with you guys on that film, but now you guys have kind of come around. So I'm happy about that. But I almost kind of was like really, really ready to dig in and get at some points. But you know, we can still talk about a few things, like you said, and definitely talk about things that are happening in the franchise. So yeah, let's do it. Definitely.
Well, I mean, you know, throughout the years, man, I've really just disliked I think my main contention with that film is the body jumping. Although after watching it this last time for the show, I think it makes sense, actually, given, I can't even say it makes sense. There's some points in the film that don't make sense as far as that goes, but the throwing up in the victim's mouth. I don't necessarily know that I get that, but
in the shave scene.
Yes, is a big one.
I don't get that either.
See, here's the thing. When I saw Jason Goes to Hell, I think it was around 16. And it was one of the first times I was actually able to get in to see one of the movies without a parent with me or trying to sneak in or anything like that. So I was already psyched to begin with. And when what's funny about that film is the night before, I had seen something on Entertainment Tonight about the movie, and they showed the FBI blowing him up. So I thought they showed the end. I thought they blew him up, and I'm like, shit, they ruined the movie. They ruined the entire movie for me, right? So I go in and I'm watching this movie, and the opening, I love the opening. I think the opening is spectacular. I love the way.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. Like I said in that episode, given the mood that they set and the score behind it, it really felt like, you know, because I even think I said this in the episode, for the past couple films, especially the score, it hadn't really felt like a Friday film. And the beginning scene to this was great. You got the tension, you got the mood right, you got the score right, everything was perfect.
And that's the thing is, and I think Dean Laurie, the writer, or I guess co-writer, because he came in later to do some work on it, but he even said that they went back and they watched all the Friday movies, and this was their homage, their love letter to the fans, hey, this is the ultimate, you know, Jason stalk and slash scene. And you're right, the music is there. You know, Harry used a lot of his classic score in the opening for that part. And everything just comes together. But what's so funny is when she runs out, you don't know that she's an FBI agent. And all of a sudden they blow him up. And I'm like, I remember everybody in the theater, I was seeing it too. Everyone was kind of the collective, what the hell? You know, where are they going with this movie now? And what's funny is I bought the movie magazine that day before I went to see the movie. But I didn't look at it because I didn't want to ruin the film. If I would have turned five pages in, I'd have seen exactly what the movie was about. And so I was completely blown away. And the thing is, in general, I like films or franchises that kind of change it up. I like new things. And I also like batshit crazy stuff. just in general, like not even part of the franchise. And so this,
well, no wonder you like this one.
And this movie to me was just like, it has everything that I could have ever wanted in a movie, period. It doesn't have to be a Friday 13th movie. It doesn't have to be any kind of other genre. And it's just, Candy's effects are so good in this movie. I mean, it really, really, this is like the apex of what they were doing, especially at the time. And just to see the work that they were doing. And you know, Candy even said, they, you know, that when they were being interviewed for this film, that they couldn't believe the stuff that they were able to do for a Friday the 13th movie. It just was unbelievable. And I don't know, I love the shaving scene. You mentioned the shaving scene, and you know, and it's so crazy. And you really got to think about it. So this scene where he gets the cop, you know, he shows up, he's at the diner, and it was so funny. And this is what you guys were kind of alluding to before, where things kind of don't make sense in this film. So Jason, in the coroner's body, shows up at the diner, and Diana's there, his sister's there at the diner. But instead of going into the diner to just get her there, he kills the cop's mistress, takes him all the way out to the Voorhees house, strips him down, ties him up to a table so he can shave him and then take his body over. So then he can go back to Diana's house to then try to get her. It doesn't make any sense. But it's so funny. It gives it like the reason I like that scene is it gives Jason a personality that nobody has ever seen before. The fact that he went through all this trouble just to shave the mustache off because the dude didn't want to have a mustache on when he had the body. I mean,
yeah, but why do you have to strip him naked though?
Exactly. That's what I understand. It's so bizarro, man. It's just, it doesn't make sense. But in a way, it's just, it is that this is what that movie is. It's just, there's stuff going on that's just so crazy that you're just like, what? But then in my mind, I'm like, this is awesome. I don't know. I love it. I'm like, they changed it up so much, but they kept things kind of the same. Like, you know, my big thing with the films is like, I like the characters. I like the original movie because I like the kooky characters in the town. I just love that. And this movie kind of brought that back. You have the diner owner, you have the husband, the cops were kind of goofy. You know, I kind of like that they took some stuff from the first movie and brought it into this ridiculous film that's just like with all this craziness going on. It's, you know, kind of grounded it for me.
So, but my question is where was the crazy Ralph Prophet of Doom in this movie?
Wait. What's that you say?
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you? You'll never come back again. It's got a death curse.
Touché.
Yeah. Yes.
No.
No, I get it. And I even I don't mind the fact that the body jumping happens because, again, like I said in the episode, like this is the first time you've ever seen Jason's body totally destroyed. So you don't really know what happens when that happens. So I didn't necessarily have a problem with that, but, you know.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of scenes I like in this movie, but I love the whole opening with the coroner when he's running the autopsy on Jason Voorhees. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just too. Think it's awesome. You liked it, Eric? Yeah, you liked it? Yeah.
Yeah, I did a lot.
It was reminiscent of Axel from part four.
Minus the sleaze. I actually think that the lack of sleaze in this movie is how they got away with some of the gore that's awesome in this movie.
Well, you know, when they really, you know, you guys know this, I mean, you know, the theatrical cut as opposed to the director's cut. When I saw this in the theater, it still had a good amount of gore in it, but you could tell that they had cut away in scenes that stuff was happening. So you knew you were getting ripped off. But I remember like a year later when I got the VHS tape to watch the camper scene with that girl in the tent getting ripped apart with this. Oh my goodness. I at that point in time, I had never seen anything like that. And my jaw just hit the floor. And I'm like, did that just happen? Did that really just happen? You know, it was unbelievable. And so there's a lot of cool stuff that when you watch director's cut that really makes the film. Like when you watch, there's no reason anybody should watch a theatrical cut of that film. There's nothing. There's no reason you should sit there and think to yourself, I think the theatrical cut's better. It's not.
Well, no, I prefer the director's cut overall, except when you're talking about Lord of the Rings. Fuck the director's cut for Lord of the Rings. It's too long.
I love it.
Yeah, it's bad enough that you have to watch a 3-hour movie. Now you have to watch a 4-hour movie. Right? It's just like, wow, man. Yeah, I don't know. I love the Lord of the Rings movies, but I think you have to really be a fan of those books to want to watch the extended version of that.
Yeah, you do. And then you realize that Meriadoc and Pippin, when they're with the Ents, and it explains them drinking the Ent water and growing hair and getting taller and all of that. And you get characters. We're Friday the 13th. Never mind.
That's a whole other podcast. There's an offshoot for you guys right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Fucking Lord of the Rings. Return to Mordor, I guess.
More Mordor.
But no, it's so. But it is pretty cool that you guys came around on this film, especially since I kind of got the vibe that you guys really hated the film at first. Like, at least from my perspective, it just kind of seemed like that. So, no.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I never really paid that much attention to the nuance of the film, which I think I mentioned to you in a Facebook comment or some shit. But, yeah, but once I watched it, you know, for the show, the way that we watched the movies for the show, I really came away with a little bit. I mean, I'm not saying that it's like one of my favorites now, but I definitely would not rank it as last anymore. Like, Manhattan probably takes the cake for my least favorite now.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, no, it's a shame with that movie too, because the premise is so cool that if they would have had a bigger budget and maybe a better creative direction, they really could have done something with that one. It's just a shame. But the ending of that movie is awful. That's the worst ending I've ever seen. It's just ridiculous. It's just
yes, bad. I agreed. It was terrible.
Oh,
yeah, my roommate, and I might cut this out, but I'm going to tell it anyway right now. But my roommate just had, cause he's been going through all the films. He had some friends over, and that was the movie that he was on.
Okay.
And and when I walked in, I'm like, I'm sorry, this is your first Friday the 13th movie.
it's you know, that Part 8 movie, we'll get back on topic, but the Part 8 movie, it's a shame because that's Kane's best movie as Jason. In my opinion, he really puts everything into that character in that movie.
Yeah, and he does.
And it's just a shame that, you know, as the movie goes on, it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse and it gets worse. And then you get in the Times Square and you're like, okay, great, this is going to be really awesome. And then they spend 10 seconds in there and then they're to the diner and then they get into the awful sewer scenes and then it's over. And you're just like, what just happened? It's just ridiculous. Bad, 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 bad stuff.
Really? Yeah. I that's not something I can even defend. We all love this franchise and I can't even defend the ending, even if I wanted to. I mean,
yeah, there's nothing good you can say about it at all.
After the diner scene, I turn it off every time. I don't watch the ending anymore. Yeah, I don't.
That's like me with Harry. Like, I have to turn the film off like right before the blood gets dumped on her.
It's crazy. Yeah. But no, yeah. I'm glad to hear that, you know, Jason Goes to Hell, you guys kind of grown on you a little bit. And I can totally understand why, you know, fans at that time when that movie came out, much like when A New Beginning came out, were just like, this is awful. Because it broke formula.
No,
it broke formula.
No. No, it didn't. Like, people bitch about that film. Like, oh, I wish they would go back to the formula. And I have to tell them, like, no, actually,
that is the formula.
And I have to tell people, like, no, actually, if any film repeated the formula of the first one, it's that one.
Yes,
because it's a whodunit. Like, you don't know until near the end. Who it
executed,
is,
and that's it's executed very poorly though. It's a whodunit.
I don't even think that. I think it was great. Like, that's one of my more favorite movies, actually.
A New Beginning is an awesome movie. I'm not debating that at all. I'll tell you, I love that movie to death. I love every single character in that movie. There is not a bad character in that film. I love every one of them. But Ethel and Junior take the cake. They're spectacular.
Oh, yeah. Hey, like, I have always maintained that Randy Quaid could have played Junior.
That would have been good, actually. Yeah, that would have been
Mr.
Really
I don't think it would. Have, I don't think it would have been much different than the performance we got
from Mr. No. Sloan. I think. They're great characters. They really are. And I mean, and Jason Goes to Hell. I mean, you're right. The diner scene. You know. Oh. We've got 2-for-1 Voorhees burgers, and you take the meat from the eyes to make another burger. And I mean, it's, you know,
that diner scene in Jason Goes to Hell. It's really great because you get Creighton Duke introduced, which is great. He's one of the best characters in the entire franchise. And it's too bad you don't get to see him more in like other films. They could have really done something with him.
Well, I really feel like, if they would have had a character like that in that movie, it should have been Tommy Jarvis.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. I could have seen that.
But I did enjoy the fact that he made reference to Jaws in that movie. When he repeated
It's a great line. It's a great line. Yeah, I agree.
I'll give you the mask, the machete, the whole damn thing. Well, and it's funny because Eric has always, even in our early beginnings, he's always referenced Jason as like a great white shark. So it was fucking cool that we got to talk about Creighton Duke's line in that movie as having referenced Jaws.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, Adam Marcus, huge fan of these movies. And the fact that he got a chance to direct that film right out of film school. I mean, imagine being a film student, loving Friday the 13th, and then all of a sudden your first gig is a Friday the 13th movie. I mean, that's got to be a huge deal. And
damn.
And so they had fun with it. I mean, that's the thing is, it's a fun movie. And that when you look at some of the other films in the series, like, you know, I think Part 7, The New Blood, I don't think that was a fun movie to make for anybody. And if you read, I mean, you guys have read stuff about the producers and the director. I don't think it's not a fun movie, but when you can tell that when you watch any film, not just Friday the 13th films, what, you know, like in Friday the 13th, like Jason Lives, you could tell everybody had fun making that movie. It's a good movie. Lots of fun making it. Jason Goes to Hell is just a fun movie with a lot of crazy special effects. And it's, you know, there's a lot of love that was put into that movie too. It really is. I mean,
you want a love note to the series, hire Greg Nicotero to do your practical effects.
Mm-hmm. yeah, he did a good job. I'll give you that. He did a good job. The score was excellent. The mood for the most part was pretty good. And I really liked. Oh fuck, what's his name? John
LeMay.
Yeah, I really liked John LeMay in that movie. He is probably what makes that movie more bearable for me. Especially near the end.
Yes.
Some of the scenes near the end were just excellent. Like, you know, I mentioned this on the episode where we talked about the film, like when he was talking with his cop buddy back, you know, near the end, like, fuck you, I got a gun too.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So great.
No, he's a good lead. I thought he was a good lead for the movie. He really was. He kind of grounded the movie when there's all this other craziness going around you. You know, he really did.
Yeah, I agree.
The ending's good. I like the ending. I like, you know, like Kane said, he wanted to have a scene where he kind of got into it physically with a character. And so he got to have that at the end, throwing, you know, John around, you know, into the jungle gym and everything like that. And great ending. And yeah, people complain that Jason didn't technically kill anybody while in his body, although he did kill Creighton Duke, but everyone ever looks at it all the time, like, you know what I mean? It's just like, he did kill Creighton Duke in his body. He did kill him, you know, and but, you know, in the end, people are always going to hate on that movie because it broke the mold. It introduced a lot of mythology that had never been introduced before. It introduced a sister, which kind of contradicts the whole reason why Mrs. Voorhees went on her rampage. And why Jason is supposed
well, no,
to be here
no,
to begin with.
No, it doesn't contradict that because wasn't his sister supposed to be through his dad, Elias, though?
Yeah, I mean, you can read into that. I mean, that's a lot of that stuff has never really been put out there as
well. That's the impression I always got, was that this sister was through Elias. Mm-hmm. So
I mean, it's possible. I mean, definitely possible. But, you know, without the, you know, if you go back to when the movie was released in theaters and even up until, you know, within the last couple of years, I mean, you gotta remember that wasn't in the comics that was put out at the time. And there wasn't.
Well,
the books,
no, because, the books and because that we you had Pamela's Tale, mm-hmm. which had Pamela killing Elias like before the events of the first film at all.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, there's that, but, you know, that was, what, 2005, I think that comic came out, maybe around there. So, you know, prior to that, there really wasn't anything written that you could be called as, or what could be called canon that would support theories. I mean, you can make the theories, definitely. I mean, I could care less. I think the movie's good. I think the plausibility of a sister is there, sure, why not? But, you know, from a fan's perspective, I get why people hate the movie. I really do. I mean, I defend the movie all the time, but I totally understand why a purist or people who think they are Friday the 13th purists, quote unquote, don't like the film and have their problems with it. But, you know, in the end, it's fun. It's a fun movie. I like the look of Jason. I like what they did with the special effects. They tried something new, and it's exciting. I don't know. I really dug it. It's
absolutely,
to me, It's the movie that really should have finished the franchise that we knew from the 80s through. There should have never been a Jason X. They want their Freddy vs. Jason movie. They did it. That would have been great. And then they had the reboot recently. But I thought Jason Goes to Hell was a good way to end it. They ended it. It's almost like I can't think of the franchise right now. But, you know, basically, you know, Part 8 really didn't end the franchise.
No, that was right? Horrible.
Yeah,
so
you can't
leave.
This was a way
of, let's end it the right way. Right,
what Jason as a kid, Jason as a kid is gonna find his way back to New Jersey. Come on,
right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but a good example of a franchise trying to correct itself is the Rocky franchise, where, you know, Rocky 5 was a bad movie and a bad way to finish it, and so he came back whatever it was like 15 years later and
with
did Rocky
Balboa,
and that was like a good way to finish it. And so in my mind, that's kind of what they were doing with Jason Goes to Hell, was they're just trying to, like, okay, this is the better way to end it. And maybe people don't agree with it, but it's way better than the way they ended Jason Takes Manhattan. So
fair enough. So let's sort of transition into talking about the state of the franchise right now. I know you broke some stories on your website about the franchise, specifically dealing with the TV show. First let's talk about the TV show.
Well, so basically, you know, I get bombarded at the site sometimes daily, definitely weekly, just with questions through emails and whatnot, social media, like, hey, what's up with the TV show? What's going on with the TV show? And the last thing that we had really heard about it officially was from Sean Cunningham back in November. But since then, we have heard nothing. And so I kind of put feelers out to a few people that would have some knowledge of the TV show. And some people came back kind of cryptic and were like, kind of like that, really not really saying anything. Somebody that I know who's very close to the project kind of went radio silent on me, which I thought was very odd. And so I started kind of asking around some other people. And the thing, what I was told was that the production looked like it was in trouble in terms of it being at the CW network. But I never could get anything official from anybody. Like, even if somebody anonymously who was involved at in some way with the show could just say, yeah, they're right, then I would have ran with it weeks ago and be like, okay, this is the deal. But my guess is that nobody really wanted to even anonymously say anything about it, because who knows, there's reasons for that, maybe business reasons, I don't know. Well, finally, push me forward to write the story, can't remember his name right now, but he wrote, he knew somebody who was in the production or close to it, who basically said, yeah, it's done at the CW. And before I wrote my story, I said, let me just check with one more person. I checked with them and they kind of gave me the, like, yeah, I guess that might actually be true. So I'm like, all right, cool. I'll write the story out there. And, you know, everyone kind of ran with it after the fact, which was cool. But we still haven't got an official kind of notice about that. No one's come out and said one way or the other, yes or no, which is really odd. Usually once maybe not my site reporting it, but once some of the bigger sites report it, it gets back to the powers that be, and you'll get something from somebody, Sean Cunningham, who knows, you know, anybody involved with the production. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen on this show outside of CW, but nobody has said anything yet. And I think that's a very good indicator that what I wrote and what people were saying are true, that the show is no longer at the CW network. What that means, I think the problem is, and this is kind of the gist I'm getting, is that they have a concept for the show, which I'm okay with the concept for the show, but it seems like they weren't able to come to, or they weren't able to find a way to really translate that over to an episodic television show. And I think the CW was getting frustrated with the lack of progress. And that's kind of what
they should just come talk to us. We would give them pointers on how to
absolutely
do it.
Absolutely.
Because we have offline talked about this at length, like how it should be done or how it, you know, how we would like it to be done. But yeah, that really sucks. And it doesn't look like it's looking good for the TV show.
It's unfortunate.
Do you have any leads on maybe it gets picked up by like Netflix or Hulu or something like that?
There's nothing right now. Yeah, no, nobody's talking.
I'm gonna speculate for a second, and Chris knows I often do this, but there is a Friday night opening from a very campy film. Because Sleepy Hollow just killed off its main character. They're not up for a renewal. They've not verified anything. They just recently switched to Friday night.
There you go.
I mean, anything's possible, I guess.
I don't see Fox picking up that show. I don't know. I would be surprised. I think if a show like
Friday, I don't know, man, put Donald Trump in it and we'd be good for Fox. I'm not gonna go there, but carry on.
Sure, no, it's if anyone's gonna get this show, it's gonna be an MTV, it's gonna be a Netflix, it's gonna be something like that where they're able to get away with a little bit more. I mean, look at the Scream television show. They ended up with some really gory scenes in that show. I don't know if you guys ever checked that out.
TV show, amazing. Yes. If you haven't watched
I did not mind the CW picking that up because, I mean, of iZombie. And I don't know if you've ever seen any episodes of iZombie, but after I did see a couple episodes, I was like, yeah, okay. So they could probably do justice to the Friday TV show. And so I was kind of bummed out when you broke the news that, you know, this probably wouldn't be happening. So do you, I know I've already sort of asked you this in a roundabout way, but
sure.
Do you see any future for a Friday TV show right now?
Yeesh. You know, and this is, okay, so here's the thing. Is it possible? Definitely. I think the problem with the show is also the same problem that we've been having for the last 7 years with the film. I think there are a lot of people involved. And when you have more people involved with a project than there probably should be, you're going to end up with countless rewrites. And I just think the TV show is going to somehow suffer the same fate as the film has been suffering, where I think there's just too many people who want to have their say in what's going on. And I just don't think they can progress any further. It's hard to say now. I can tell you from talking to somebody a year ago that it seemed like that was the case, where there just seemed to be a lot of people wanting to get their input into what was happening. So I would say right now, the TV show, since we haven't had an official confirmation on it being gone from CW, I don't know. I think that it's not going to happen for a long time, unless somebody comes out very soon and says, oh, we're still at CW, or, oh, hey, by the way, this network, now we're almost ready to go. I would say no, I don't think it's going to happen right now.
All right. Well, since you mentioned the new film, is there any talk on the street about that?
Well, with the film, I don't know if you guys read about this or aware, but you know, they had a due date for the new script this month. That's when the new writer had to turn it in. And so right now that's kind of where they're at. And so if Paramount likes the script, I would say within the next couple weeks to a month, you'll probably hear something to that effect, where they would then green light the project, and then they would start getting crew, director involved. So right now, at least there's a little bit of hope, because at least they had a script writer hired. You know it's due sometime this month, and there's a possible future there still. I'll tell you this right now. How about this? Paramount wants to make this movie. They need to make this movie. They have to get this movie out by next year. I think their five-year deal is up next year. So they're running out of time, and they're going to put something out, because they didn't make that deal with Warner Brothers for Interstellar to not do something with Paramount with Friday the 13th. I mean, they have to do this. I mean, this is like their one chance to just make their film. And I don't think they're screwing around with this and not wanting to make it. I think they want to make it. They just want to make the best film they can make. But the problem is, they're going to back themselves into a corner here, where all of a sudden they're going to have almost no time left. And then they're going to either A, rush a film out that isn't going to be good, or B,
Jason X.
Yeah. Or B, they're going to run out of time. And you know, we don't know the exact specifics of their deal to get those rights back. I mean, who knows? Maybe they could extend it. Maybe they have longer than 5 years. That was just reported. So who knows exactly what their deal is? But my sense is they got that out soon. So at least right now for the film, it's still in development. They have a timetable. They want to film that soon if they want to hit that January date. They have to. If they try to film that at the end of summer, which is what I've been hearing again, I mean, you think about it, you get a 30-day shoot, maybe 40-day shoot. If they start in August, they're not going to finish until September. Then you got to edit. You got to get your promotion ready. By that point, you're almost into November. And then the movie's supposed to be out in 2 months? I don't know. That seems really pushing it, which leads me to believe that you're probably looking at more like an October release next year instead of a January release. So,
well, I mean, that's fine as long as we get something new.
Yeah.
So going off that, you know, what would you like to see in a new film? I mean, honestly,
right now I'm open to anything. Like I said, I love Jason Goes to Hell. I love what they did with that. I'm pretty much open to anything. I do. I'm a Jason fan. I'm a fan of this franchise. The only thing this is the way I always feel about these films. As long as the character of Jason itself, number one, is not altered to a point where it is no longer recognizable as the character we know. That's one. And people may think in Jason Goes to Hell they did that. I disagree. So that's number one. As long as they don't do that. Number two, they cannot completely change what has been created as a mythology from the original film. For instance, you know, if they go in and start saying, okay, the kid didn't drown at Crystal Lake, but something else happened, or it happened at a different camp, or it's not Crystal Lake, it happened. You know what I mean? Like, if they just start really almost erasing out like main plot points of what the franchise kind of was based on, you know, then that could be a problem. But honestly, I think I told you, Chris, that I've actually read the script that Nick Intasca, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, had turned in last year for the new film. And I love the script. It's really good. There are some things, it's really heavy on drug use and really heavy on nudity. And
long as they all get fucking killed, who cares?
Yeah, right. The problem with that though, and is if you guys remember when the 2009 movie came out, there was huge backlash on that with the sex scenes and drug use, especially the nudity and sex scenes. I remember.
Dude, I thought that movie was great. Like,
yeah,
that was great. Like, I have said this very often. Like, the reboot was a love note to the entire franchise. Like, I could not have thought up a better film. It was just Dan Mears was great,
right?
As Jason, like he called back to Ted White. Yeah, there is not a bad thing that I could say about the 2009 reboot.
No,
not
at all. I like I like the movie. It's good, but I will tell you, people are not cool with excessive nudity and sex scenes anymore.
Cool with that.
Well, Dad, see, you and I
It takes me back to my you know, my 10-year-old self. Like, yes, I'm watching a Jason movie. I'm gonna see boobies.
See, and that's kind of like our generation, because, like you say, we grew up on that, and that was kind of the whole part of the reason why we liked watching these kind of movies so much, because we're, you know, that's a moment of self-discovery, right? It is the whole deal. It's all there. But nowadays, and this is part of the reason why Paramount skipped on, I think they recognize that today's audience isn't completely cool with that much of it. And if you look at Brad Fuller from Platinum Dunes, he even said that he regrets putting in as much as he did into that 2009 film. Now, looking back on it, he realized they kind of missed part of their audience because of that. And so getting back to Nick's script, it's a really good script. It, like I said, it's very heavy on those things, but it's set in, I believe it's 1988. And, you know, it involves not only Camp Crystal Lake being abandoned, but it also involves a camp across the lake from there. And they do some investigation.
Camp, you gotta do that panty raid.
Exactly, yeah. And it's you know, it's a good script. It was done well. And they actually add some really cool mythology into it. And I don't want to say too much because I don't want to get in trouble, because I promised I wouldn't say a lot. But anyway, so I just think Paramount got a little scared by that script. And now they're kind of like, and another thing with Paramount, they were, the whole reason that they made that trade with Warner Brothers is they were very gung-ho on the found footage. That is a fact. I've talked to people who are in the industry who have told me that the higher ups at Paramount were so dead set on found footage that they were so excited that that's what they wanted so badly to make. And after they had gone through rewrites and tried to find a way to make that work, they just realized it just could never work with a Friday the 13th film. That's why they hired David Bruckner for the film to direct. That's the whole reason they hired him, was because he had had such success with his short films and anthology film doing the found footage, you know, style of filming. And that's why eventually I'm guessing, you know, he left the project, was because it's like, well, they're not doing found footage. They didn't take this other Nick script now. And so now they're just kind of like in limbo. And I'm hoping that this new script that's coming out soon kind of catches their eye and they go with it. Cause yeah, I mean, I think fans are just tired of being given a release date and then it getting pushed back or removed. And then, like, a lot of people feel like the producers are just kind of messing around with us, right? They really do.
I don't understand. You know, it's not like they hired a former porn director to direct this movie. I mean, for the reboot, especially if they're griping about the nudity, I mean, Danny Steinemann kind of walked that line of softcore porn.
Sure. And Sean Cunningham did too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, can, at this point in the 21st century, can we really consider reefer a drug?
Yes, it's a class one, or schedule one. Yeah, duh.
Thanks, Tricky Dick.
Oh, all right, Jason. We really appreciate you coming on the show to talk.
Love talking to you, man.
Yeah, not a problem, guys. You guys take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to the show at. If you want to support us financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. If you have a question or a theory, you can hit us up at campbloodpodcast.com/feedback or comment on the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/47. A special thanks goes out to the Downriver Rat for our intro and outro music. You can check his stuff out at thedownriverrat.com. Until next time.